Hello, and welcome to Securing Sexuality, the podcast where we discuss the intersection of intimacy
and information security. I'm Wolf Gorlick.
He's a hacker, and I'm Stephanie Gorlick.
She's a sex therapist, and together we're going to discuss what safe sex looks like in a digital age. And today we are talking with Raven Faber, the founder and CEO of Eng Erotics. Hey.
Hi.
Thanks for coming
on. Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
I am so excited to have you.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thank you. This is a really nice start to my week. I don't always get to begin my week with a podcast, so thank you very much for inviting me.
Our pleasure. Although you do get to start some weeks with television shows. We're going to get to that. I want to ask you about that.
This is true.
But
good
but
point.
Tell us a bit about your company.
Oh, well, gosh. Let me start with the standard boilerplate pitch. So Eng Erotics specializes in the design and development of intimacy devices, and we also specialize in the formulation and manufacture of CBD-infused intimate body care products. I founded Eng Erotics in July of 2016. I was a new mom. My son was 7 months old. And I founded the company in direct response to lack of laws, rules, regulations, formulation guidelines, the lack of QAQC in the world of intimacy devices. So really, you know, engineers are here to help keep the public at large safe. And products for sex and intimacy should not be excluded by that standard of care. Unfortunately, they are, though, as y'all know.
That was one of the things that I thought was so fascinating when Wolf and I were in Europe this last fall. We were at a store in Amsterdam that specializes exclusively in condoms.
Oh, I've been to that. I think I've been to that store. Sorry to interrupt, but yes.
The Condomery?
I have been there.
Did you take their class to become a certified condomologist?
No, I did not. I did not. Admittedly, when I was there, I was pregnant and very tired. So
condomology is a really, you know, difficult discipline. I can respect the boundaries.
It was a cool store, though. Sorry to interrupt. I don't meet very many people that have like, yeah, I've been. Did you go to the Pink Elephant too? You know, the neon. Did you?
Oh, yeah.
You went to go see the show?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. And to clarify for the audience, because, you know, Wolf has a job where they might not be thrilled. We were actually in Amsterdam for an advanced SAR, a sexual attitudes reassessment. And that was part of my homework. One of the assignments was to pick something in the red light district and have that experience so that we could then sit and process and reflect with the group. So that is how my poor, very goody two shoes husband got dragged into the red light district with his wife. But what I was thinking was when we took our condomology class, one of the things that they talked about was like the ISO standards for condoms. And I had never thought about that before because we think about these things as like, you know, a dollar device that you immediately throw away and that might live in your wallet forever. It had never occurred to me that there are ISO standards for condoms. But now I'm curious, are there similar standards for insertables and for sex toys?
There are now. ISO 3533, the first edition, was published on September 2021. And so ISO 3533 is titled Sex Toys, Design and Safety Requirements for Products in direct contact with genitalia, the anus, or both. So yeah, that would describe that nicely. So we didn't always have an ISO standard. As of a few years ago, we do. But as you know, it's not a requirement to follow these standards. So, should it be? That's like a whole nother conversation. But the short answer is yes. Yes, now we do have one.
I actually don't think I did know that it wasn't a requirement. It all sounds so fancy. And I mean, we are based in Detroit. So, you know, we have the auto industry and I'm very used to driving around and seeing like giant factories that have like ISO 9000 certified like flags and banners. And so it never occurred to me that these fancy like requirements or parameters that I learned about aren't, they're just like guidelines. That's fascinating.
Now I'm not an ISO expert, so take this with a grain of salt. And I don't know if all ISO standards are the same across the board. You know, I'm going to look that up. I'm going to dig more into that, because ISO standards and checking all the boxes is something that Engerotics is working on, because it's a pretty meaty document. ISO certified is not a requirement, but I don't know if that is the case across all industries. So for the sake of not spreading misinformation, I want to do my due diligence before you quote me on that one, because that is a very good question. I hadn't thought about it that way before, because there are a bunch of ISO standards out there for everything,
including cybersecurity. So I've got your back. Because in the cybersecurity world, it's nice to follow them.
All right. But it's not mandatory in cybersecurity. Is that what I'm hearing?
In many industries, it is not. There are certainly slices where they're like, vouch, shout, follow. But a lot of times people are like, oh, we're aligned with the standard. I'm like, what does aligned mean? Well, we sort of follow what parts of it we want to follow.
This is a really good conversation. Thank you for giving me that information, because, you know, in the past, like I said, it had been my understanding that ISO is voluntary. But knowing that there's an ISO standard for all kinds of different industries that don't necessarily have anything to do with one another, it's like, well, can we paint it with a broad brush and say that it's all voluntary? It's like, well, Raven, you really don't know. So thank you. So that's helpful to know. I know that in the world of sex toys, there are many things that you don't necessarily have to do. And there are a lot of manufacturers out there, definitely store owners out there, that are not aware of ISO standards and what they are, let alone, you know, like how to follow them and things like that. So yeah, that is very helpful to know.
And I'm just going to apologize to all of my, you know, sex therapy, sex educator people right now for having even gone down this road, because it occurs to me as I'm asking the question and listening to the answers that I don't even know what ISO stands for, which means a good portion of my people probably don't either. And I suspect I might have led them astray into the world of technology. Heaven forfend.
Just remember, we can be heavy on the edits for whatever isn't working for you. Gosh,
it's the
International
Standards Organization.
Oh, that sounds so simple.
Yeah,
it is, and it's always the simplest ones that I seem to forget. But man, there are a lot of acronyms that are floating through my head in any given moment. And when you have two kids, ISO standards, I don't think by the general public, they're probably not very well understood, certainly not by your average consumer. It's a dry read, the ISO standards. So this is not, Wolf, I'm sure you'll agree. Like, you know, your everyday person probably isn't sitting down reading the ISO standards. One of the things we need to do this year, I want to talk about this at our upcoming board meeting. I believe that's this week. Yeah, that's this week. Talking about, you know, where we're at in being compliant with ISO standards, because this is not something that you just do overnight. You know, like you may have to. There are things that we did, like once it was published, that we started doing to start getting in line. But I want to make it clear that one does not just like flip a switch and then all of a sudden, you know, you're compliant with everything in the document. You know, you got to go through your processes and what you produce with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that you are in compliance, if that's what you're choosing to do. Does that sound about right for your industry, Wolf?
Yeah, 100%. And I think the point that I would pull out of that is this gets back to safety, this gets back to quality, this gets back to these are devices that, you know, we want them to function as intended. So the level of assurance is really what this is all about. Even though there's a lot of things within that standard, the top line is this a quality product that we can rely on, and is this a safe product that we can use?
Absolutely. I sometimes wonder, I mean, this is not going to stop us in our pursuit of making sure that we're ISO compliant. It's really important to me as an engineer, as it's important to my team as well. But I know that there are a lot of people out there that, you know, they're probably not going to care. They're not going to know what that means if it's on the box. That's okay. Like, that's okay. There's a cluster of people out there that'll see that and they'll be like, yeah, cool. This makes me feel really good. But I think that there's an even bigger number of people out there have no idea what that means. And they don't really care. And they don't really care to learn and look it up. And that's just fine. Those people are safe too. So yeah, we should be doing that because it's right. And not simply because like, oh, well, you know, we want to look more attractive and we want to like, it's the right thing to do, you know, like it's the right thing to do.
It is the right thing to do. But also I think of, you know, the shops and the shop owners, especially a lot of the feminist shop owners, they do a lot of education. So oftentimes when Stephanie is doing like a book signing or one of these events, I'm there to support her, which means I'm there standing for very long periods of time doing nothing, and, which is fine. I just stand and I watch the store. And we were in one, I think it was Madison. Was that the right city, love?
We're at a Woman's Touch, which owned and operated by a sex therapist.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Wonderful. So what was fascinating about a Woman's Touch in Madison was that all along the walls, they had pamphlets. And I'm going to say sales staff, but they may have a better term for it, was very informed. Like, oh, by the way, here's what this means. You see this logo on this box. That's what that means. This particular measure means that. This material means this other thing. This is safe for this use. This is meant for that use. And it was really set up, I thought, in a very educational, friendly way. And I watched one guy very, very nervous come in. He's like, I just want to, what was that? I was just wrong. And finally it came out that he was trying to get something for his wife, but he wasn't sure what. And they just put him right at ease. And like, here's a couple pamphlets. What is she into? What are you thinking about? And so what we've seen with like material sciences and some of these small changes around making these toys more accessible and more safe, trace back to having that store energy and having that that educational component that I oftentimes see when I'm traveling with Stephanie.
I agree with you. And I think that, you know, that's not uncommon with small boutiques, especially boutiques that are woman-owned. People are more discerning, as they should be. I feel like those who get their sex toys from Amazon and from some of the bigger, I won't name any names. Yeah, I'm not here to throw anybody under the bus, but there are certainly people out there that just kind of want to get whatever it is they're going to get. They don't really want to talk about it. They don't want to ask questions. They're operating under the assumption that, of course, this is okay. Why wouldn't it be okay? And even if it's not okay, I'm not sure that I want to talk about it. There are a lot of fantastic small independent boutiques out there that really, really do care about the products that they carry. And they really do care about educating their store associates. And it shows. It shows. It shows in the, as you mentioned, the literature that you see in the store. It shows from how the associate interacts with the client. And it even shows by like the brands that they carry. For a lot of people, they don't necessarily care about the educational piece because it takes time. It takes time to learn these things. It takes time to get to know a brand, get to know their products, what makes this product better than a different product, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not coming down on anybody because they're not familiar with ISO. I don't expect anybody to be. I'm an engineer. So, you know, it's like walking into a place and expecting somebody to know that that's an integral sign in the Engerotics logo. Like most people don't know that. I know that. Other math nerds know that. It's for me. It's, you know, I think it's fun. But what matters is the discernment, you know, the discernment and the attention to detail that people do show in whatever ways they choose to show it. So where did you say the shop was again?
Madison, a Woman's Touch in Madison.
Okay. I'll have to look them up. I'll have to check them out.
They are phenomenal. Ellen is an icon in the sex therapy world. One of the first sort of like feminist indie bookstore sex shop sort of owners. Amazing space to hang out. Yeah. And it feels very much unlike any other sort of shop that you go into, especially the more chain ones where, you know, it's all very like neon and glaring. This is very soft. They have nice music. It's a very welcoming space. It doesn't feel like a porn shop, which is really nice for the uncomfortable men trying to shop for their wives. But this does make, you know, raise a question for me, which is how does a self-described math nerd end up in the sex tech business?
Oh gosh, that's really easy. I was doing sex toy parties in graduate school. That's the very simple abridged version. So, but really, you know, I was raised in a sex positive house. You know, my mom was raising me to be sex positive before there was a word for sex positivity, before we were having conversations about pronouns and intersectionality. I was like, I don't know. I remember my friends asking me all the questions about sex because I always seemed to know, and I did know because my mom was answering my questions. So I always credit her for me being that person at my core. But fast forward to grad school, I'm a student at CU Boulder, and I just finished my first degree. I have a bachelor's in architectural engineering. With an emphasis in structural engineering. And I was getting ready to start my master's degree in civil engineering, also with an emphasis in structural engineering. And I went to a sex toy party and I had a really, really good time. I had a lot of fun. I spent money that I didn't have. It was cool. And I wasn't really interested in throwing a party of my own. I was really fascinated by how much business the consultant was doing. It seemed like she was having a lot of fun. Everybody was spending money. I'm like, man, I like money too. And I'd been to plenty of things like that, you know, candles and purses. I mean, this was back in 2008. So social media wasn't quite what it is now. Like the technology had not gotten there. So it was a lot of like your standard makeup parties, purse parties, like before the market became really, really, really saturated with, you know, that type of thing. But anyway, I went and I had a great time and I decided I wanted to do that. I'm like, that sounds really cool. I never had any interest in selling makeup or candles or whatever was available at the time, but sex toys. Well, yeah, I will. Absolutely. So I started doing that and I figured that I would do that just through my graduate studies. You know, make some extra money. I was doing that at night and on weekends. I was interning during the day. I was going to class and I was having a really good time. But then I discovered that I was really good at it. I didn't know that I'd gotten the family entrepreneurial gene, but I did. I had no clue. Like entrepreneurship runs in my family and I didn't think I got it, but I did get it. And I had no idea I'd be good at sales. Now, when it came to, you know, you've got to recruit a team and have a downline and blah, 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 blah. It wasn't for me. Like that part wasn't for me, but man, I could move some product. Like I was really good at selling dildos. I was really good at selling lotions and potions. Like, and after a while, like I got a reputation, like, you know, people started calling me asking like, can you do my party? And if I wasn't available, they would change their date. Like they didn't want somebody else doing their party. So I did that for like a decade. I thought I was just going to do that through graduate school, but I continue to do it even when I got my big girl job and I'm working as an engineer, you know, growing my engineering career. I'm still doing parties at night on the weekends, and I'm like, well, work over here as an engineer and do sex toy parties and then I'll have all the money. And that was a lot of fun. And it was cool until it wasn't. I became disillusioned both with my engineering career in the corporate world and my career, as you would call it, in the world of direct sales. And really like the thing that really ties the two together is like, I could do this better myself. In the case of my engineering career, I was just not really impressed with the glass ceiling. The corporate ladder is not built for me. It was just, you know, so many inequities. You know, the world of engineering and construction, it's really not built for mothers. It's not built for women. It's certainly not built for Black women. And it shows. And I was experiencing that the further and further I progressed in my career. On the direct sales side, I was really put off by the lack of inclusivity and the lack of real education. So for example, 50 Shades of Grey comes out, and all of a sudden there's training being offered to the consultants, you know, 50 Shades of Grey training. This is how you offer a 50 Shades party, blah, 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 blah. And it really wasn't about, like, we know that that's not about healthy BDSM. You know, this is not a how-to guide about BDSM. Like, this is like, you know, I'm not really worried about anybody being pissed off. Like, we've all been talking about it. And so the training that was being offered to the consultants really wasn't, it wasn't educational. It was about how to sell the novelty gray tie and the branded nipple clamps, things like that. So, you know, my response is like, well, I'll do a kink 101 party, but I'm not going to do a 50 Shades, but just things like that. The marketing back then, and again, this was like, you know, in the early aughts, or, you know, approaching 2020, like this was the early aughts through, you know, into the teens, but no inclusivity in the marketing, very cishet white, heteronormative, like just, you know, it just, we weren't having the conversations that we are now. And not to mention, this is like the big part that really threw me off. The products being offered were not quality. And when I started noticing that some of the products seemed to be all right and other products, you know, were just weird, they broke easily, things like that. I started, you know, doing some digging on my own and, you know, seeing what experiences other people had had. And that's when I started learning about toxic sex toy materials, toxic materials and motors that break. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. But of course, this isn't really something that you learn about when you're a consultant repping a bigger company. Like, that's not, because it's not what it's about, you know? And so I came to this conclusion of, well, I'm an engineer and I like sex. I bet I could do this better myself. Like, I bet I could start a company and get people to care. And I did. At least it appears that I have. So yeah, it's been a really wild ride. My life as a sex toy sales lady, and as an engineer, like they ran in parallel for a long time, but you know, they were getting closer and closer and closer until they intersected, is really what happened. So, yeah, that's the story.
Those parallel lines running closer and closer is what has convinced me that I'm going to wake up one day and Stephanie's going to have a career in cybersecurity. This is happening. I can see it. I can see it. She's going there. No, but you know,
don't be shocked.
I want to pull on one thread that you said earlier, because when I coach and mentor, I oftentimes point to a pattern that I noticed when I used to hire people. They'd be like, I ran a conference, I spoke at these places, I contributed open source code, I built all this stuff, and there'd be a 5-year gap. Mm-hmm. And consistently that 5-year gap was, we had a kid, and we realized that jumping from job to job and contributing, burning long hours and everything wasn't consistent with being a good parent in those early years. And so oftentimes when I'm coaching someone, I'm like, you know, we all want to be a parent. But remember that when that happens, like for 5 years, just put your career on hold a little bit and ride where you're at so that you can be there for your kid. And so I was shocked when you were like, oh yeah, so I had a little baby. And I'm like, you know what? Now's the time to start a company. How did you balance those two? That's so hard.
I mean, I guess it depends on what you feel is hard. I mean, hard for me was crying on Sunday night because I had to be at work on Monday morning. Like it just, I truly wore some heavy golden handcuffs. I was making a lot of money, and collectively my husband and I were making a lot of money. But when I came back from my maternity leave, and you know, like in order to understand what I'm about to say next, you have to know that I was a structural engineer in the oil and gas industry. So I came back from my maternity leave and the price of oil was not great. And so all of my projects were on hold. There wasn't anything to do. So that was like the first thing that just, it was awful. Like, I was going to work to do nothing, right? Like, and of course, this is every teenager's dream. You know, I want to get a high paying job and I want to sit around and I want to do nothing. It sucks. Like, it's not for me. Maybe some people, more power to you if that is your jam. It really wasn't. I wasn't using my brain. I was really upset because, you know, I had to deal with, you know, my son's in daycare, you know, and meanwhile, I'm at work, there's nothing to do. And this isn't the fault of the company, of course, it's the way that, you know, it's the industry and the economy. But I'm not even using my brain. I'm not even, I'm sitting on overhead. And that's really where I was like, well, you know, I should start that thing that I'd been thinking about, because I really got the call, if that's what you want to call it. I'm doing big air quotes for the sake of the podcast. But I got the call to, you know, do something about a year and a half, 2 years before I actually founded Endurotics. So yeah, I was a new mom because I didn't have anything to do at work. Like, I'm not at home taking care of the baby. I'm at work making money, but I'm not doing anything at work. I'm sitting at overhead on overhead. After the price of oil increased and projects were back on, it didn't get any easier for me. I'll spare you the gory details, and it became very, very clear to me that this was just, it wasn't a good place for me to work. It wasn't a place where I was going to progress. I really thought that, because I quit my job, not to run Endurotics full time, but to take a break, big air quotes, take a break and take a breath and then get another position. That's what I thought. What ended up happening was I ended up running Endurotics full time. I got to a point in my life where it's like, I want to be happy, you know? And when I left my job and I was working on Endurotics in my spare time, because I was home, I was taking a break. I'm like, I'm not ready to go back to work. I'll take a break and then I'll go back to work. I'll find another position. And when I had the opportunity to be at home and be with my son, and the only other thing that I was working on was Endurotics, amazing things started happening. And it occurred to me, like, well, what if I do this full time? What if this is what I did? So it hasn't always been easy. Like, I have two kids. I have an 8-year-old and I have a 5-year-old. On top of that, they have extracurriculars. Like, we all do martial arts as a family. I have one who does dance. I have one that does soccer. I like to go to CrossFit in the morning. Like, you know, I have a full schedule. And that can be challenging, but none of it is nearly as challenging as forcing myself to go grind and work for a paycheck at the cost of my sanity and the cost of my happiness. That was very, very difficult for me, you know, but yeah, you're right. Raising kids in and of itself is difficult. Doing that when you're running a business. But I make it work. I make it work. It brings me a lot of happiness. You know, I'm happy to find ways to make my life work. It brings me a lot of joy.
One of the things that got me interested in sexual health actually was the fact that I was parenting, because I was curious about where the babies were coming from, but because I was also in my early 20s and frequently invited to those very sort of sex toy parties that you were describing. And some of the more toxic chemicals that I first heard about, I heard about in the context of baby toys, of the like phthalates, the substances that would make things soft and squishy for babies to chew on, right around the time my son was a toddler and chewing on everything, became a big buzzword of, you know, we need to be aware of this, we need to be thinking about it. And so I was going to my friend's sex toy parties, and I was asking the salesperson, well, do your toys have phthalates in them? And they would look at me and go, I don't know what that is. And that was really frustrating for me, because often the salespeople were handing me business cards that said they were sexuality educators. Yep. And, you know, later in my career, as I progressed and as I, you know, pursued my own sexuality education and certification, I'm like, oh, there's, you know, there's the folks like Ellen that run a Women's Touch who are certified sex educators. And then there's the dildo home party MLM sort of system that are calling themselves sex educators, but can't tell me if the toys have phthalates in them.
You touched on a really important point. Yes.
it was my experience trying to be discerning in my kids' toys that made me much more aware of my toys.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, as you know, when you become a parent, everything changes. And I know that's like the cliche thing that people want to say, but it really, really is true. And it makes you more aware. You're acutely aware of things that maybe you wouldn't have paid attention to otherwise. That piece that you said about, you know, the MLM consultants, you know, sex experts as opposed to actual experts, that's spot on. That's absolutely true. I'm waiting for the Netflix special. Like, I'm waiting for it to come out. I think it needs to happen. Because as I'd said previously, you know, the training, big air quotes that consultants would get, it really wasn't training. It was sales training, which sales training's great. We offer our stores that carry us sales training. That's important. But knowing about the product and knowing about it because you care about the ingredients, about the brand, about your customers, that's really important too. So yeah, you touched on a big piece. One of the things that brings me a lot of joy here at Engerotics is because I honestly, when it comes to molecular type stuff and formulation, that's not me. This is why we have our formulation specialist. It's why we have our chemical engineer. You know, we work together as a team to make sure that all of our bases are covered. So, but yeah, I hear you. That makes perfect sense. I mean, my mom heart like leaps for joy at that because we certainly care about what our babies are consuming. Like even now, like I'll be 38 next month and my mom still cares about, you know, what I'm eating and what I'm consuming and everything. Like, are you all right? So no, that's not so strange. It's not strange at all. And it doesn't shock me that when we become mothers, I feel like we get birthed into another phase of life. And we never know. Sometimes it might be entrepreneurship, but it's just like this other phase of life where we're really just like getting our asses into high gear. And we're fixing our BS and we're doing our work because we have this little life. And oh, it's showtime. Like, I better care about what's in my food. I better care what's in my toys. And you know, and you got to care about your health too, because, you know, I don't want to check out at 50. You know, I didn't start working with a nutritionist until just a few years ago. I didn't start really paying attention to the numbers on my blood work until just a few years ago. But it matters, especially when you're in your 30s like me. And you're losing people. Like, I've lost two friends. They were both 37 years old within the last 6 months of each other. And they left littles behind. It shouldn't be that way. So I think, Stephanie, like, yeah, that's a perfect, you know, the intersection of significant change and significant discernment and parenthood. Yeah, spot on. Absolutely.
Which then begs the question, how did you decide what toys you wanted to make? How did you decide what products needed to be out there? How did you get from the MLM sort of mindset, but approach to product and where you are now with Engerotics?
Sure. That's a great question. So the thing, and I'm going to make a lot of people mad, but whatever. The first thing that I wanted to accomplish is I really wanted to own my own business. And when you're a consultant, you don't. you do not. You do not. Come at me, people, but it's a fact. And here's why. There was a time when I was working in direct sales, MLM, where I had a very, very popular product. And I sold it like gangbusters. And it would have been a really amazing product if it were better built, better designed. But the bullet, it included a bullet. It kept breaking. And so I reached out to the home office and I said, hey, I got six clients here. All of their bullets broke. Like, what can we do? And they said, well, send them back. Like, you know, submit a RMA, return return material authorization, send it back, and we'll replace it. And so I did. And sure enough, there was like lemons in that batch. I mean, it just kept going and going. And why is that? Because they are designed the same. They're made the same with the same quality, same standards, if you call them that. And so I reached out again. I'm like, isn't there anything more that we can do? Like, can you like get with the manufacturer? Like, if you happen to be manufacturing these, like, is there something that we can do? And there really wasn't. Like, the only option was, you know, send it back, send it back. It's like, well, I'm not going to send back this subpar product to get more subpar product. And so when you're a consultant, you don't sit at that board table. You don't own equity. Like, you don't have any say as to what goes in the catalog or where you're sourcing those products from. You do if you own the company, though. So it's like, well, if it's my company and it's my show, then, you know, I can do whatever I want, you know? So that's the first thing. The second thing you got to understand about engineered erotics is that we support well-engineered, well-designed intimacy devices in all of their forms. And so the first form, and admittedly, when I started the company, this is where I thought I was going to start, with concept to market. So invention. And I, you know, and I still have all these really, I think they're awesome ideas, but I'm like, yeah, I want to do this and I want to do that and I want to do this. And that's where most people assume that companies like mine come from, and they can. But here's the thing about concept to market. You've got to have a lot of time, a lot of tenacity, a lot of money, more time, more tenacity, even more money. And then you got to prototype and put more money into the next prototype, and money and money and money and money. And you better have a connection, and you better know rich investors, and you better be ready to, like, you know, sacrifice your equity, and it goes on and on and on and on. And as I started learning more about that, I'm like, well, damn. I want to make money like yesterday. Like, what else can I do? I don't know any rich people. I don't know rich investors. Like, this is going to take forever, and it often can. And so I started with what I know, which is engineering. I started with what I knew about internal engineering. And the question then became, well, can we take a fundamental design that people are already familiar with and change it so that it outperforms the competitors? And, you know, the answer is always yes. I mean, you know all about sex toys. You've seen what's offered out there. There's really, like, we're seeing some new stuff pop up. Yeah. But, you know, like, what gets bought a lot? You know, your bullets, your wands, your plugs, like, you know, the things that are familiar to people, that make people comfortable. Now, that's not to knock the more innovative designs, you know, that are, you know, but people that are new and they're like, this is my first time. Like, you know, they're probably not going to start with the, you know, the creme de la creme of design. You know, they want something like, you know, let me just ease on in there. And so when I started the company, it's like, well, you know, really all we need is to make sure that, you know, these internals are sound, that they're well connected, that they're made of good materials. We got to make sure that the exterior is made of quality material, nothing porous, you know, something that's easy to clean, something that's hygienic, something that's going to be compatible with your favorite lubricant, you know, very simple things. And unfortunately, you know, there are a lot of products on the market that, you know, are just made out of, you know, crappy materials, and it shows that they don't last very long. And so, the analogy I like to give is, you know, cars. You know, a car is a car is a car, you know, all day, every day. But we're not driving around in Model Ts. You know, we now have Teslas, obviously. But the fundamental design, it's the same. The function is the same. So the invention has not changed, but the engineering has. And the engineering has become more refined. And that's where I started engineered erotics at. It's like, well, I just want to make good products. So we had started initially with working with factories and saying, hey, you know, we want to bring on a bullet. We want to know about the internals, and we want to tweak it a bit. We want to adjust it a bit so that we know that it's going to work well. Like, we want to change this material. We want to change this button and do that. The third way that, and this was a very happy discovery because I didn't even know that this was going to happen. The further we got into our journey, I found that there are factories that started pitching us. Like, there are factories out there. And of course, you know, they're going to have an R&D department. They essentially have, you know, a bigger, much better funded version of Engerotics in-house. And what do? They sit around and they design. And they come up with different concepts and this sort of thing. And then they come looking for people like me. Like, hey, like, this is what we do. This is what we're creating over here. What do you think? Would you like to give this a home with your brand? And that was really cool because now all of a sudden, my inbox and my DMs were getting inundated by other people wanting me to look at their work and what their factory was designing and creating. And a lot of people don't know that that can be the case either. But here's the thing about running a company and about being the CEO. You cannot quite possibly have all of the ideas. Like, there are so many people out there that think that being the CEO is like, I thought of everything. Or being the founder is like, everything was my idea. I take credit for all of it. It's not possible. A wise business owner is going to take input from wherever it comes. And I wasn't looking for it. It came and found me. So that third piece is how we launched Dimmy Vibe, Shroom, and our Kegel Cherries. And as I got familiar with this particular factory, one of their questions was, well, you know, what are you thinking? Because we were like on the, we were done with the first product that we launched. It's no longer on the website. You know, we were looking for other designs, see what else is out there. I mean, what's the point of trying to think it up yourself if somebody else has already thought of it? I mean, you know? And so one of the things that we really wanted to try was a gender neutral design. But admittedly, I didn't know what that looked like yet. I knew what appealed to me as a cisgender heterosexual woman. I know what I like, but you know, like I didn't really have a lot of experience with gender neutral toys. And so I was kind of getting familiar with that. And in talking with this particular factory, they showed me a few things and one of those was Shroom. And I was like, this is brilliant. Send me samples. And they did. And I'm really impressed. I was impressed then. I'm still impressed now. Taking them for a test drive, but not in the way that you would think, like, you know, dropping them on the floor, dunking them in a sink of water, you know, like really putting this, you know, this creation through the ringer, you know, really seeing like, what is this made out of? Like, can I break it? Like, you know, what do? Like, you know, is this going to break? I realized that, you know, these are really, really well made. And yeah, I think that this is something that Engerotics should support. So all of that to say that, no, I didn't start the product line by pouring silicone in my garage. Like there are a lot of people that, there are people that think that. No, like that's not the case. And certainly concept to market is something we still want to do, but we're bootstrapped. We're not VC funded. And I'm not quite ready to go down that path, but sticking with the path of modifying internals, adjusting external materials, button accessibility, things like that. Very simple things that I think that a lot of people, I hate to say that people overlook it, but a lot of people do because, you know, they're looking for these big, bold, grand, ooh, the world's never seen this before. But simple engineering, simple refinement, simple iteration gets you miles in your journey. So yeah, that's how we approach that. And it's been wonderful.
Yeah, as you're talking about that, I think about, you know, the design thinking process and how much simple, thoughtful iterations of existing products can improve just about everything we use, right? So that makes so much sense to me.
Absolutely. I think that a lot of people don't realize that simplicity really is a good thing. I mean, I think in the world of sex tech, what is expected is, and there's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing wrong with app control toys. There's nothing wrong with teledildonics. There's nothing wrong with AR or anything like that. Me, I'm really simple, though, in the respect that I really don't want to have to futz around with, you know, making sure my app is up and running. Like, I just want a well-made something or other. I can just get it out of the drawer and turn it on and go to town. And I think a lot of people don't realize that there's a difference between the engineer and the inventor. Oftentimes, the inventor needs the engineer. Sometimes they're the same person. But there's a lot that goes into, hey, I have an idea, and actually bringing it to market. And so my own impatience and my pursuit of making that for sale, like I wanted to figure out a better way. And so Dimmy Vibe sells well. Shroom sells very well. And it's really reaffirming because fancier is cool, but it's not necessarily the end all be all. Sometimes what people need is just something that is well designed, easy to clean, it's hygienic, it's gonna work for longer than 6 months. Sometimes that's all you need. Like there's a lot of reward in simplicity.
You know, as you're saying that, the other thing that comes to mind is there's such a power in brand, right? There's the Braun brand will forever be, you know, etched in my mind because of Dieter Rams and all the quality. You know, that the company you're setting up and the vision you've outlaid in this podcast just really screams good brand to me and good design, which reminds me, I know we've hinted at it at the beginning, you mentioned in the middle, but I do want to ask you, you were on television, right? Or your episode's about to air.
Yes, it did. It already aired. You can go watch it after you're done here if you want.
So tell us about Sex Sells and that process. What was that like?
It was a lot of fun. If I'm being completely honest, I was running on fumes that day. But it was a lot of fun. I did not, for a second, I didn't think I was going to be able to do the show. And that's because my daughter had been in the hospital just a few days prior. I was going to, the day I was supposed to fly out, my daughter was in the hospital is what I'm trying to say. The day before I was supposed to leave is when I emailed the producers telling them I wasn't going to be able to make it. So thankfully, she was discharged. All was well. And everything was stable at home and with her. And I let, you know, the producers asked me, they were so kind. They're just wonderful, kind, genuine people. I really appreciate them. But you know, I gave them the reel. I'm like, this is what's going on. And thank you for the opportunity. And they said, well, you know, please keep us posted. We hope all will be well. And I sent them an email saying, hey, everything's good. I hope you guys had a great shoot. Wish I could have been there to be there with y'all, that everything's good here at home. And they still invited me out. They said, we still want you in this episode if you are still willing to come. And so I went out. And it really was a great experience. I say I was running on fumes because the events of the previous days were just so taxing. I mean, having a child in the hospital is no joke. It's terrible. It's emotionally draining. And so I was still, you know, trying to recover from that. But it really was a fantastic experience. I still can't believe it happened, but it did. it did happen. It happened. And the episode aired this past Wednesday. It is season 3, episode 6. So, and it's on the Fuse and Fuse Plus is the network that you'll find that on.
So everyone should go check that out. Where else can they find out about what's new and upcoming for you and for your company?
Joining the newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter, and it's accompanied by a monthly blog that we publish, and there's a lot of great educational stuff in there, and you'll see whatever announcements we have to make. The other way is by joining the Engerotics community on Facebook. It is a private Facebook group, not to be confused with the Facebook page that you can like. The Facebook group is where the heart and soul of the company lives and breathes. So rather than interacting with Engerotics, the company, you're interacting with the people that happen to make up the company. So you can be a part of the group and tag me and ask me questions directly. You can ask our other team members questions directly. If you have questions about products, if you have any concerns, that sort of thing. A lot of people don't realize that Engerotics is a user-driven company. And a lot of the things that are on sale today that are available on our website, they came from feedback out of that group. So it is a really good place to be if you have an idea or if you just enjoy sex memes, because we post a lot of those in there. And everybody likes laughing about sex. I know I sure do. But those are the two best ways. I mean, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. But if you really want to know the latest and greatest as it happens, the newsletter and the Facebook group are my two recommendations.
I am so excited that you took time out of your day to come and talk to us about your passion for sex toy safety, your business, your thoughtful intentionality behind everything that you've done. This has been really just enjoyable for me. One of my favorite conversations I think we've had.
Thank you. Thank you. It's Monday, so I like barely have it together today. So that means a lot.
Well, this is a great way to start a Monday. And we post our episodes on Sundays, which means for some people, this conversation will be how they start their Monday too. And how great is that?
That is wonderful. That is wonderful.
Yeah, Raven, thank you so much. And to those listening, thanks for tuning into Securing Sexuality, your source of the information you need to protect yourself and your relationships.
Securing Sexuality is brought to you by the Bound Together Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. From the bedroom to the cloud, we're here to help you navigate what safe sex looks like in a digital age.
Be sure to check out our website, securingsexuality.com, for links to more information about the topics we discussed here today, as well as our live events.
And join us again for more fascinating conversations about the intersection of intimacy and technology. Have a great week.